Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. America, all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the 23rd day of March, on Domini 2024, and you, you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 6 minutes after the hour, we're going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose. Kick off your shoes. Don't get the blues. Have you paid your dues? Here comes the news. On Thursday, the U.S. Department of Justice sued Apple, alleging the company violated antitrust laws by restricting rivals' access to iPhone features and monopolizing the smartphone market. The lawsuit in U.S. District Court for the District of New Jersey, alleged that Apple suppresses innovation through a web of contractual restrictions that it selectively enforces through its control of app distribution and its app review process, as well as denying access to key points of connection between apps and the iPhone's operating system called Application Programming Interfaces, or APIs. Apple can enforce these restrictions due to its position as an intermediary between product creators, such as developers on the one hand and users on the other. The Department of Justice is seeking an order determining that Apple has illegally monopolized the smartphone market in the U.S. The agency also wants the requested order to block Apple from continuing its alleged anti-competitive practices. The Department of Justice said a court order should, at a minimum, prevent Apple from using its control of app distribution to undermine cross-platform technologies such as super apps and cloud streaming apps. Prevent Apple from using private APIs to undermine cross-platform technologies like messaging, smartwatches, and digital wallets. And prevent Apple from using the terms and conditions of its contracts with developers, accessory makers, consumers, and others to obtain, maintain, and extend or entrench a monopoly. The Department of Justice defines super apps as those that provide broad functionality in a single app. These apps that Apple allegedly is undermining can improve smartphone competition by providing a consistent user experience that can be ported across devices, the DOJ said. Apple said that the lawsuit threatens who we are and the principles that set Apple products apart in fiercely competitive markets. If successful, it would hinder our ability to create the kind of technology people expect from Apple, where hardware, software, and services intersect. It would also set a dangerous precedent, empowering governments to take a heavy hand in designing people's technology. We believe this lawsuit is wrong on the facts and the law, and we will vigorously defend against it. So, our poll of the week at soundbites.org, that is Bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is U.S. sues Apple. It's an illegal monopoly. And your choices are, darn tootin' it is. No, it darn well isn't. I can kind of see the point. I don't think it is. And Apple what now? So far, we've got 25 votes, and darn tootin' it is. I can kind of see the point. And Apple what now are tied for first place. And, of course, you can vote in the poll just on that. We can fix it in post. Head on over to soundbites.org. That's Yo. Bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you. And vote there. And, of course, you can also ring in by giving us a call at 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415.
Yeah, there's interesting arguments both ways. Apple has a monopoly on Apple products. Why? Yes, they do.
Yes.
Just like Ford has a monopoly on Ford products.
Exactly.
If I want to buy a Ford, I have to go to an authorized Ford, a new Ford. I have to go to an authorized Ford dealer.
Right. Well, but what they're saying is it's not the devices themselves. It's the fact that third parties are locked out of some features. That's the thing that they're objecting to.
Well, that's the way Apple has always been that way, though. When you buy a computer from Apple, you have to go to them for all the parts. You couldn't go to third-party vendors to, say, buy video cards or all this other peripherals.
Everything but the motherboard. You could buy third party.
Now you can.
Now you can, but
not anymore. No, it's gotten worse.
Oh, sure, because now everything's soldered in.
Right. In the Intel days, you could put your own RAM, your own hard drive, your own video card, standard PCI slots. Everything but the motherboard came from Apple.
But didn't... But so, correct me if I'm wrong. Say I do have a Mac, and I bought third-party memory. Does that void the warranty, though, if I put that in and use it and something else goes wrong?
That was always a question. If you break the computer putting third-party RAM in, then the warranty's void. But the RAM, it's using third-party RAM itself, doesn't void the warranty. So if you break your brand new Ford trying to put a Chevy part on it, is Ford going to cover that under warranty?
Yeah, no, I wasn't saying.
Yeah.
Well, but this really is about the internals of the software.
And they're seeing what's just happened in Europe with the Direct Marketing Act, and Apple had to change the App Store in the EU.
Right. And so we'll see what comes of this. This is not a case where they can say, well, look at Android. We're not a monopoly because we're not talking about hardware. We're talking about the internals of the software in the iPhone itself, where there are certain things that third-party developers do not have access to that Apple developers do.
You know, one of the big things is the NFC chip.
Right.
It's for Apple Pay. So your third-party app can ask the OS to read the NFC chip, but the app can't access it directly.
Right, right. It's that kind of thing that they're talking about.
Yeah.
Whereas Apple's own software can access the chip directly. And they're saying that that's what makes it a monopoly. So we'll see where that goes.
And Apple says that's what makes it safe and secure to use.
Right. No, believe me, I get both arguments.
Yeah, that's the problem.
Now, it's up to the judges, all of whom are older than I am and not technology-based.
Yep. I still remember reading the judge in the Oracle Java case who learned Java overnight and said, yeah, Oracle, no basis. You know, Google's Java implementation is fine.
Yep. So we'll see where that all goes. We've got a couple of questions already. Lorraine and Ken in Ontario, New York, said Chromebook connects to Wi-Fi on its own. Basically, recently a friend stated upon turning and logging onto her Chromebook, she found Wi-Fi was on. She further stated that she has never used Wi-Fi or Bluetooth from the first time of use and has always had both Wi-Fi and Bluetooth turned off. She asks how this can happen, being she lives alone and assured us no one has access to the laptop. She wondered if an individual could remotely access her Chromebook even when it's powered down and off. No. It also says she connects via a direct connect dongle to an RJ45 jack plugged into a router. If the thing was off and Wi-Fi was off, no one can connect to it. On the other hand, it is very possible that the last time she was on, she had an update happen in the background, which is how they work. If you don't go and do it automatically, there's an update in the background. And then she shuts the machine down. Then the next day she turns it on again, and the update takes over and puts the new operating system in.
And I can see the update going, oh, my God, why Wi-Fi and Bluetooth are off? You shouldn't do that. I'm going to turn it back on.
And it turns them on for her. So it is likely that it was – it is almost certainly that it was a an update to the operating system that turned Wi-Fi on. And so that is a thing that you should just be aware of. And every once in a while, you're going to get an update that turns it back on again, and you're just going to have to turn it off.
Now, the next thing she said is it connects to Wi-Fi.
Right.
If she really meant connected to Wi-Fi,
right.
Does that mean she has an open network with no password, and the computer said, oh, no password, I'll just join it?
Right.
Or if the network did have a password and it connected to it? She did type somebody.
Yeah, somebody did type it in.
Did type the password in once.
Right. So the question is it connected just to the router, or is it connected to the network?
Right. Or on her other Chrome-based or even Windows or Mac running Chrome, it knows the password, synced through her Google account, so now the Chromebook knows the password.
Right. So that's
all possible.
Yeah.
Right. And a related question is, Where's the best place to purchase a Faraday cage for a laptop, a tablet, a phone, etc.? Well, on the one hand, you've already got one in your house. It's called a microwave oven, but I wouldn't use it if I were you. But you can buy Faraday bags at all kinds of places, including online and the largest online retailer on the planet. And those will work if what you want is to keep it protected when you've turned it off. If you want to keep it protected when you're using it, that is much more difficult. It is not difficult to create a Faraday cage. It's just wire mesh. So you make a box out of wire mesh, and you've got a Faraday cage. That's easy. But the question is, one end's going to be open because you're going to be typing on it.
You got to get your hands through it.
Because you get your hands through it. So you've either got to develop something that lets you put your hands in even though the front is closed. That makes it hard to read, et cetera, et cetera. Or you've got to make sure it's absolutely faced 100% away from any Wi-Fi signal ever, anywhere, ever.
Yeah.
Or you just don't bother with it when it's on.
How sensitive of stuff is she doing?
I'm not
trying to be judgmental because we do preach, you know, safety and everything else, taking precautions. But sometimes people can get so paranoid,
right,
that, you know, they overthink things. But if they're doing the basic stuff, like we say, as far as good antivirus, good spyware, malware, and, you know, watch where you go. Don't click on these sites, you know, you're unsure of. And just
she's doing due diligence.
Most
of this stuff isn't going to work anyway. On the other hand,
she may want to check her extensions.
Check her extensions. And the reality is that when you're talking about computer security, you are not paranoid enough.
Yeah,
that's a simple fact of life. But you can build a Faraday cage if you're looking to protect it while it's running, but it's problematic because one end's going to be open. If you're looking for something just to put the Chromebook into when you're not using it, then search online for Faraday bags, and you can buy them, like I said, in pretty much every retailer, including the largest online retailer.
Some people do the same thing for their wallets.
Yes.
Since so many credit cards have, you know, the near-field communication chip, the NFC tap-to-pay chip, theoretically it only has a one-inch NFC only has a one-inch range. But with a big enough antenna, bad guys can pick up your credit card number as you walk by them.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
So you may want to get a Faraday wallet or a Faraday card holder.
Protector.
Which is what I have. I have a Faraday card. It's basically tin foil. You could also make the cage with aluminum foil. Now that I think of that. So you can do it, that, you know, the same thing you make your hat out of. You can make the Faraday cage out of that if you like.
Can you actually get tin foil anymore?
Probably. Yes, you can. It's very
mostly
expensive.
Aluminum foil, yeah.
But if you want to make a Faraday cage, you can make a temporary quick one out of aluminum foil, but you can also make a more permanent one out of like chicken wire, any sort of finish metal mesh.
Home Depot, you get the chicken wire, and you can build that bends.
Screen door wiring.
Same thing.
With a finer mesh.
Yep.
Because
exactly.
you want the holes to be less than 2 inches.
Right.
Because that's the wavelength of Wi-Fi.
Right. 2.4.
Yeah.
Or 5.
5 gigahertz. Yeah. Then so twice the frequency is half the wavelength. Right.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So you want to make sure that you've got a fine mesh. And Steve is right. The screen door stuff you can buy at the hardware store will let you build a Faraday cage. And as long as the ends overlap, you could tape them together. You know, you need a pair of tin snips and something to wire it together with. And it could be packing tape. And anything that will, as long as the ends are overlapping. Right, so it's keeping out the signal. You're good to go. What's the frequency, Kenneth?
Yep.
And you can do that fairly easily. But again, if what you're looking for is to protect the thing when it's off, to make sure that even if it turns itself, which it won't do when it's off, but still, if you want to make sure it's protected when it's off, one of the Faraday bags is your best bet. And they're less. I think I remember seeing them for $25, but I think that was for more than one.
And how many pockets do you want? Just like any regular computer bag.
Right.
How many pockets do you want? You want a carry strap on it?
Yeah. Right, right, right. You can get them with carry straps. You can get them as if they were little plastic bags.
Or you can get a little sleeve that you then put in your big backpack.
Right, right, right. So
again, that mesh screening, that works great. In fact, I use it for ham radio.
Yep.
We set it out on the ground instead of having to put out, say, 16 to 32 wires.
You're using it for the exact opposite thing.
Yeah.
I'm using it as
a ground surface,
right,
which helps, you know, pull out any of the noise and all that other stuff and blocks it.
Right.
So, yeah, and it's easy to shape, like you're saying. You could form a little box or something else if you want to, you know, easily if you get creative with some tin snips and that and create a little box that you could open in that. Yeah. It doesn't have to be elaborate. It just has to be able to keep the noise out.
And the new 6 gigahertz Wi-Fi has a wavelength of 1.9 inches.
There you go.
So you want to have your mesh smaller than that.
Smaller than that. Exactly right. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Andy from Irondequoit, New York. What's up, Andy?
Greetings.
Hello?
Yes, hello. Are you there?
Yes, we are. Are you?
Yes, I am.
Okay, what's up?
Okay, well.
Nope, now you're,
nope,
now
we lost you again.
You cut out again.
Uh-oh.
Nope, now you're back.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
As soon as you start asking the question, you cut out.
Yeah. Oh, that's terrible. Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Okay. After patiently waiting for a number of years, finally in our neighborhood, I won't name them, but the fiber optic people are coming down the street. Okay. Up until now, I've been with the unnamed cable network. Okay. So I'm signing up. I currently have my own wireless router that I'm using.
Good.
And I, you know, because I don't want to pay rent. And I noticed on the specifications for the fiber folks that they're saying that if I want to use my own router, it needs to be an AC1900. The router I have currently is an AC1750.
So that's okay. You just won't get as fast as you could get.
Speed-wise.
So typically, the fiber starts at 500 megabit, which your router won't be able to support.
You'll get close. Yeah. It's 450 megabits.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, and that's fine, because that's still going to be more than I'm currently getting, and it's I'm going to be paying less. So, okay, that's great.
Yeah. As people that had the really old, you know, N's or G's, Wi-Fi router that had been around forever, that suddenly your 50 megabit router doesn't work with your 500 megabit internet.
Right. So, yeah, you'll be fine. It will not be 100% of what you could get, but it'll be as much as you can get with that router. And mainly your thought is when you next buy a router, make sure you get one that does gigabit, because you could always go up to that if you wanted to.
We're on AX now. And what's the new one coming? So AX is Wi-Fi 6.
Right.
So and then Wi-Fi 7 is coming.
Whatever you get, it's the last generation.
Yeah. It's always playing catch up.
Exactly. All right. So you should be good, Andy. Relax.
And you'll enjoy the speed and the lower money that you're going to save.
Exactly right. And I think we've lost Andy again. Yeah.
So Wi-Fi 7 is 802.11be. So we ran A through Z and then AA through AZ because we're currently on AX.
Right.
So now it wrapped around again. So they did BE, BA, BB, BC, and when. And,
BA, 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 BI, BICI, BI, BI.
Yep. Sorry. So we're on BE now. 802.11be. So just like has happened on every previous Wi-Fi version, the draft specification has been written. Companies are pushing out routers with the draft specification in it that might work a little faster than 6.
Yeah.
Or 5. So if you have a 4 or 5 router, you probably want to look at getting a 6 router.
Well, yes and no. If you don't have a device that does 6.
But your next device will.
Well, that's it. That's right. So when you get a device that does 6, get a router that does 6.
Yep.
There's the and then, you know, you'll be unless, again, you don't care about getting 100% of what you're paying for.
So that's what Andy's in that situation now. He's getting his first device that supports faster than he's had.
Right, right, right. So, he'll be happy.
So he has a 5 router that's AC. So he could get a 6 router to be a little faster, but it's not something he'll probably notice unless he's transferring very large files computer to computer.
Right, right. Yeah, I I will say this. I am paying for 500 megabits and I'm getting like 520.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm very happy.
Yep.
I have a gigabit router, which means machine to machine in my home, if they're both connected up via cable, via wire, I can get gigabit connection. Otherwise, I get 520 megabits. And I'm perfectly happy with that, too.
Yep.
It there's more to it than just what your router will do. There's also what your machine will do and what the, if you've got, hardware router as well as your software routers and.
Yeah. And his AC 1750 has a theoretical speed of 1750 megabit, 1.7 gigabit.
Right.
Theoretically.
Theoretical. Yeah, exactly.
You usually get about half that, maybe a quarter.
Right. All right, our next caller is Dan from somewhere in Colorado. Where are you, Dan?
I'm on top of Vail Mountain.
Don't jump.
Yeah. It's beautiful up here on top of the world.
Yep, I'm sure it is.
First of all, I have two items. The first one is that I'd like to challenge your listeners to go to the Radio Hall of Fame and nominate this show to be in the Radio Hall of Fame.
Well, thank you.
All they have to do is go there, and there's a nominating page. And the nominations are open till the end of this month. But do it today so you don't forget.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Anyone who would like to nominate us, that's where you do it.
Is it self-serving if I put that link up?
Yes, you should.
It is self-serving, and I should do it.
Yes, to both.
Yeah.
Why not? Thank you, Dan.
Yeah. Well, I think if any radio show deserves to be in it, it's yours. You've helped many, many, many people with their problems, and it's a wonderful thing. So I hope you get rewarded by being in the Hall of Fame.
Thank you, Dan. Another unsolicited testimonial, ladies and gentlemen.
My next item is I have a friend that inherited a laptop, and the BIOS has been password protected, and they don't know what the password is. Is that a brick, or can they undo that somehow?
Replace the BIOS chip.
Yeah, that's about it. That's surface mounted.
Maybe, but probably.
Depends on how old the laptop is, but probably. That's not as easy as it used to be.
Yeah.
There used to be all kinds of tricks you could play.
Yeah, different crack codes and everything else that you could run, different hacks and everything. But you'd actually, and this is no lie, you'd have to get up to governmental security for them to handle it, to be able to crack into it. Because they actually still have the tools that they could crack into it. The average person, not happening, no way. And like I say, how old is the laptop?
What's the model?
I don't know. I believe it's maybe 4 years old, maybe five, something like that.
Still surface mount. I almost
guarantee it.
I would try Googling the name of the BIOS and forgot password. There were, depending on how old the computer is, there used to be a jumper on the motherboard that you could jump.
Right.
That would clear.
He said 4 years.
Yeah, so that might be too new for that.
And
yeah.
It used to be that you could pull the battery for a certain amount of time. And
leave
stuff
that
like
out.
That. But most of those tricks aren't viable anymore, but it certainly can't hurt to try them. But the first thing to do is when you know the model number of the laptop and you know the version and make of the BIOS, that's when you can do the research on the web and find it. I'm sorry. All right, we're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It's 30 minutes after the hour. You're listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe. That would be Soundbites, right here on member supported Jazz 90.1. We will see you in just a couple of minutes.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 36 minutes after the hour, we are Sound Bites, and we have Andy from Irondequoit back on the line. Sorry, Andy, you disappeared, and we thought you'd hung up, but it turns out apparently you just got cut off again. Andy?
I think we lost him again.
Andy's gone again.
Yeah,
sorry, Andy.
Yeah, here he is back on the board. He's got some phone issues.
He's got some phone issues.
Hopefully it's not our end, because we have some phone issues here sometimes.
We do, but we had no problem with Dan, and
yeah.
He's calling from Vail, Colorado. So
yep.
It wasn't that at all.
I wonder how much snow they have there.
Yeah, exactly. Well, they want it, though.
Yeah.
Those sick people. If you're out in this today, God love you, but it should be gone by Monday or Tuesday at the latest. All right, we're going to try it again. Andy, are you there?
Yes, I'm there. Can you hear me?
Yes. Can you hear us?
Yes, I can. I'm sorry. I have no idea what's going on. I'll make this as quick as possible because I fear I'll get disconnected. So I'm going to use my existing router. Now, when the time comes for the transition, does the router care? I mean, will I just be able to unplug the Ethernet cable, put it in, once the fiber optic is all set, can I just plug the Ethernet cable into the back of the router and I'm good to go? Or will I have to set it up again, mess with IP addresses, et cetera, et cetera?
Yeah, theoretically you will not.
Yeah, the addresses for that service are different than, say, Spectrum.
The outside ones, but not the inside ones.
Right. No, not the inside, but outside.
So what will happen is anything. So let's talk about your internal network first. For the stuff for your internal network, you will not need to change anything. Turn everything off.
Mm-hmm.
Make the switch, and then turn on the fiber optic router first, then turn on your router, wait a few seconds in between, right? Do the fiber optic router first, then your router, then your computers. Everything should come up with no problem.
Oh.
Because you haven't changed the SSID, the name of your network, or the password for your network. So it should be identical.
The one caveat is if you originally set this router up with like a static IP to the cable company, you'll have to change that back to DHCP. But 99% of the time, it's DHCP anyway.
Right. Or if you had to put in a specific username and password to get to your previous provider, you'll have to remove that.
Maybe DNS entries.
Right.
Sometimes it was a manual entry for DNS.
Right. So anything you did manually to set up your old router, to set up your router to connect it to the internet, you will have to undo. But as for the internal network, you won't have to change anything.
Okay. So, and that also would apply to, say, if I have a streaming, I have like a Roku device, I would just turn that off.
Yeah. Yes. Turn everything off. And make the change. I did that when my Orbi died, and I replaced it with a Google Home or Nest or whatever they're calling it this week. Because I kept the same network name and password, only one machine complained. Out of, whatever I got, 40 things connected to that. One machine complained, and I just rebooted that a second time, and it worked.
Okay, so it sounds like I should be okay because the I have a desktop PC that.
He's gone again.
Yeah,
he's gone again. Look, you'll be fine. We're gonna move on. I'm sorry, Andy, but you've got way too many phone issues going on. But yeah, that should work just fine.
If he's got a VoIP phone, it'll work a lot better now on fiber.
Exactly right. But so basically, as long as you don't change the name of the network, you know, Andy's home or whatever mm-hmm. you're calling it. And then you don't change the password to that network. As long as those stay the same, and they will because you're using the same router, everything should come back up just fine. The router doesn't care about the connection to the internet as long as you didn't do any of the things that, Steve said, yeah. Setting a specific password to get to that outer network.
Yeah, 20 years ago, that was a common thing you had to do.
Right. Almost nobody does it today. So yep. It's 99% that you will not have a problem. Anything you manually did to change the defaults to connect to the internet itself, not your internal network, but the external internet network, the wide area network, the WAN end of things, as opposed to your LAN, the local area network. Anything you manually change to connect to the WAN, you have to undo. Other than that, no changes are necessary. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Mark from Greece, New York. What's up, Mark?
Hello, hello.
Hi.
How is everybody?
Peachy, how are you?
I'm good. I'm waiting for the snow to melt.
Just another day or two.
Yep. Speaking of BIOS, I've got a laptop from 2019, so about 5 years old. And I don't know if it makes a difference. It's a gaming laptop, and it's made to be upgraded, but there is a BIOS reset switch on the motherboard.
Right.
Yeah.
It depends. Right, exactly. It depends entirely on the model you've got
manufacturer.
And what features they have.
Yeah, it's an Acer. I don't remember the model number, but it's an Acer.
Yeah, is it Acer who bought Alienware? No.
Dell bought Alienware. Yeah.
But
yeah.
A lot of gaming laptops are made differently because they're designed to be played around with.
And that defeats the purpose of having a BIOS password if you can just open the case and flip a button on it.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Well, it's a slight deterrent. Right. So rather than getting into the computer immediately, it takes you 5 minutes to open the case.
Right.
Oh, this case is not easy to open.
Yeah,
it does have a couple access points where you can update the RAM and you can put a secondary hard drive in. But to get to the actual NVMe hard drive or to get to anything else, oh, it's a nightmare, especially the backside of it where the hinges.
Yep, yep, yep. A lot of them are that way.
If you don't have a spudger or something to get in there,
yep,
and it's going to take a while.
Yeah, most devices are just not designed to be repaired anymore.
Right.
And that's the truth. But yeah, most things do not have a switch. Again, as we said to Dan, if he can find the model number of that machine, he can look up the manual online and through there find out if there is some sort of way to reset the BIOS.
Right.
But that's the only way you're going to know. Every model is different, and every model, most models don't have that feature anymore.
Yeah, he should look it up just in case they use a motherboard that had one on it. You know?
Right. All right.
And I know some manufacturers have disabled it, even though it's there.
Right, exactly.
So
exactly. But it can't hurt to try. But he's got to do some research and find that specific model, make and model.
Yep.
All right, thanks, Mark.
Yep, bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Yeah. They're all so different. Now, there's only three companies that make laptop motherboards anymore. Well, four if you count Apple itself. Right, but I'm talking about
they're probably all made in the same Shenzhen factory.
Exactly. But there's only like three companies that make them. But they're made to the specifications of the manufacturer. So they will have different things. Now, you buy an Acer or an Asus, and they're essentially the same motherboard you'll get in all the others, only they're made, Asus and Acer are generally the manufacturers of most of those motherboards for the other companies anyway.
Because there's so many PC manufacturers, you know, any combination of features you want probably exists somewhere.
Right.
That's the one issue in the Apple world is, say you wanted a cheap computer with a big screen. They didn't make that for a long time because only the expensive computers had the big screen. So when they just introduced the 15-inch MacBook Air, we sell a ton of those now. Yeah. Because people want the low-end computer at a lower price with that bigger screen. And you know, even, you know, right. The lowly M1 processor is fast enough for most people.
For most people, absolutely. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Dave from Canandaigua, New York. What's up, Dave?
Oh, all kinds of stuff today. Good morning, good afternoon, lovely weather.
It is a beautiful day in spring in Rochester, New York.
Yeah, a couple of interesting notes. I called maybe a month or two ago about, I have IP camera viewer, which is an old program to look at your IP cameras. And it originally would launch when you launch Windows.
Yep.
And then I did an update, and it wouldn't launch anymore. So not too long ago, I did another Windows update, and now it launches at Windows Startup again.
That's Windows for you.
Yeah. There is a preference where you can tell programs to launch at startup or not. A lot of programs automatically stick themselves in there because, you know, you downloaded my program. Yeah. Of course you want to use it every bloody time. But that makes the computer slower because it has to launch all that stuff.
Yeah.
But it may have been a Windows update that broke some compatibility with the program, and then the next Windows update fixed it.
Yeah, I think that's what it was.
Yeah, there are some generic IP camera viewers out now too that you can look at as an alternative.
Yeah.
Now there's one called Anycam.io that says it can work with any IP camera.
It took me so long to get a working setup. With the laptop that we're doing this thing, you know, we're streaming to YouTube from Zoom and blah, blah, blah. So anyway, and also, as far as upgrading from Windows 7 to 10, this is my little struggle session. Yeah. I'm admitting it's finally time for me to upgrade.
Oh, I'm so sorry, Dave.
Yeah, well, you know, I used to say I'll give up my Windows 7 when they pry it from my cold, dead hard drive.
Yeah, and, now's the time.
Yep. Anyway, the real question I have today is I had a friend of mine sent me a note on her Mac. Something popped up, I think, in her browser that shouldn't have popped up. And so I went to the Security Tango, say, okay, I'll go look at what kind of tools are on there for Macs. And there's nothing there. So I was wondering, is that something where she could, like, have somebody log in remotely and cruise through her machine? Rather than have to drag it to a store?
Well, yes, but there are plenty of things on the Security Tango for
Mac Arena.
For the Mac stuff. If you go to Let's Dance, there's the Mac Arena. Mac Arena.
I missed it.
Yeah.
Okay. I missed that. See what happens when you get old?
Yeah.
Yeah, I've been there doing that.
What we have seen is that 90% of the malware pop-ups are just an ad on a website. Nothing gets installed in the computer. You don't have to click anything. You just, by going to that website, the ad is displayed. Typically, closing the ad is enough. The danger of letting someone into your computer is that's what the bad guys do. The ad claims there's a problem. Let us into your computer. We'll clean you out. Wink, wink, nudge, nudge. So
we'll clean you out, but it's a bank account.
Yeah. Finding someone you trust to remote into the computer is the question. And
is that something you guys do?
Not here, but at my day job. I work at a computer store locally.
Right. That's what I meant. It's in your store.
Yeah, that is something we do.
Okay.
Generally, we like to have the computer brought in because it's easier that way. But we do know that some people have mobility and sometimes hard to carry a big computer in.
Yeah.
Right. Okay.
So give them a call, but you can also check out securitytango.com, and one under Let's Dance, there's the Mac Arena.
Yeah, I was just there like not that long ago, and I must have looked at it and not seen it. Oh, well.
Sorry.
Okay, thanks.
Yep.
And Malwarebytes just got updated to new version 5, and they completely revamped the interface, and I don't know if I like it anymore.
Well, it's different.
Well, yeah, that's it. But they've also started adding more features. They're running into what every other AV company does. Now they're advertising a VPN and overhyping what a VPN can do for you. You know, a VPN cannot stop bad guys.
Right.
You're going to go to a website that's infected. That website's infected.
Right.
And
right. And it's going to get through. It's going to get through the VPN because you told it to.
Yeah.
Yes, please send me that file. The VPN isn't going to fix that.
It can stop known threats.
But sometimes, on the VPN. Right.
And to do that, it has to do deep packet inspection.
Right.
Because virtually every website is now encrypted between you and the other end.
Right.
So now when you install a VPN, it's only encrypted from the VPN to the other end.
Yeah.
So they can see everything you're doing. So the one of the big reasons to run a VPN is to stop your internet provider from seeing where you go.
That's pretty much it.
But now your VPN company can see everywhere you go.
Right.
So you can change your location so you can steal video from another country.
And it doesn't and it does not stop bad stuff from getting to you. And it truly also does not stop the other end from knowing where you are. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, that just doesn't work.
Yeah.
We've seen it over and over and over again. VPNs don't stop that from, you're not anonymous with a VPN. You're just not.
And we've seen cases where the police show up at the VPN company saying, give us all your computers because we know this person was signed into your VPN at this time.
Right. Right. And when a government agency comes to a VPN and says, here's a warrant, give us your logs, guess what happens? They give the logs.
Yeah. They don't want to be
a You are not with... anonymous through a VPN. You never have been and you never will be.
Question for you. Have you seen The Beekeeper?
Not yet.
Oh. I would advise everybody, you know, people take movies for what they are, movies.
Right.
But that kind of hits home to reality because it is happening. We've had people here on the show call in and say they've got conned out of this scam or that scam. It's happening daily. And if you don't think it's a good movie, it's
71% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Yeah.
92% popcorn score.
Ooh. It is a very good movie. You wonder, at first.
About bees.
Yeah. It's like bees, but it all comes around to the hive. And
I tell you what, I have trouble with Rotten Tomatoes because you would think that a Rotten Tomato score means it's the high Rotten Tomato score means it's terrible.
Yeah.
Apparently it does not.
It's backwards.
Just the opposite.
It just annoys me. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Chuck from Penfield, New York. Hi, Chuck. What's up?
First, what's the name of that movie again?
The Beekeeper.
The Beekeeper.
It's a Jason Statham action movie.
All right. We'll check that one out. Thank you. I've had a problem since almost January or so. I called you guys once on it, and we did a little thinking, and I've done some research since then. It has to do with an update on Windows 10 that keeps bombing. It's a security update, and it gives me an error, et cetera, et cetera. I've done some internet research, and what I'm beginning to find is it turns out, if I understand it right, that there's a recovery partition that needs to be the size changed to make this work. But what I'm hearing is, you go into the DOS window, and you start executing these command line instructions, and I'm going, I thought we were beyond this stuff, guys.
Not for something like a recovery partition, no.
Have you ever heard of it? Is it something that's common going around?
There has been a so here's the deal. Windows, most machines that come with Windows installed have a recovery partition. The idea is that if you crash your machine, you can set it back to factory norm.
Yep.
All your data are gone. You've lost everything you had, so you better have backups. But Windows comes back, which is all they care about.
Because they don't give you disks anymore.
Right.
And most computers don't even have a CD drive.
The problem is they make it as small as possible. And there was an update that increased the size of Windows itself, and now it doesn't fit in that partition anymore. So you have to make the partition bigger. The big deal is that partition is supposed to be hard to get at. They don't want every jamoke on the street playing around in that partition.
Right.
So they don't make it easy to deal with. So yes, the safest way, there are a couple of programs you can run that do it in a GUI way, but believe me.
Partition Magic.
Partition Magic will do it, and a couple of others. The safest way, but not the easiest way, is to follow those command line instructions.
Okay, but it's got to be a contiguous partition.
It does.
At the root?
Yep.
Okay.
So that may mean that if there's not enough contiguous space, you may not be able to partition it.
That's
which means you got to back up everything, erase the drive, and start over from scratch.
Well, at the very least, erase a bunch of data, because I think one of the
commands... depends on where that partition is and how it's...
Right, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So you do have, at the very least, to make enough room, and the directions you're looking at will tell you how much that is. I don't remember it off the top of my head. But so you've got to have that much free space on the drive. And if you don't, you've got to delete some stuff, just the way the world works.
Okay. I'm just kind of annoys me, and maybe it's not the first time anybody's been annoyed, that Windows kind of created this problem, and they're leaving it to the rest of the world to solve it.
How big is your hard drive offhand?
Oh, there's plenty of room. I have no issue with the room issue.
Well, so what happened in the early days is, say, especially laptops, which have smaller drives, had 128 gig drive.
Yeah.
So it took 20 gigs for the recovery partition, because that's a lot of space for you to lose on your C drive.
Right, yeah.
So you look at pretty much any computer now, there's 500 gigs on the computer.
Yeah.
Your C drive is 460.
Yeah.
But so now that's not enough anymore. They got to take a little more from C to make that invisible D, sometimes invisible D. Sometimes you can see them.
Yeah.
We've had callers who've put their data on D because I hear it's a 50 gig drive and there's 10 gigs free.
Yeah. Right. And they can back it up to there.
Yeah.
And then the hard drive dies and everything's lost.
D is where all my data is, and all the application stuff is on C. So I can resurrect and just reinstall C. And not have to worry about my personal data.
As long as
they're all intact.
Separate physical drives,
yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
I found a link from Microsoft on manually resizing your Windows recovery environment.
Okay.
That's what he's talking about.
Yeah.
Yes, it is a command line.
Yeah.
Is there an, I don't want to say automated, but a mechanism which will reallocate sectors, et cetera, so that now you've got enough room, and it just kind of
that used to be
almost does it. What was the word back in the old days?
Optimization.
Yeah, yeah.
You used to have to run an optimizer every week to make all your files contiguous.
Okay.
Theoretically, the instructions that you have been complaining about are the ones that should do all of that for you.
Right. Yeah. Well, in my mind, the average user should not have to be the network the administrator.
Well, I agree with you, but that's the way it is now.
What do we count? Yeah.
Right, exactly. Sorry.
All right. Thank you, sir.
Yeah. Good luck.
Bye.
Back up everything. Back up everything twice before you do this. It is. This is the one time where you do not skimp.
And Windows,
on your backup.
Windows does have a built-in defragment and deoptimizer.
Yeah.
No.
Optimizer.
Defragment and optimize. Yeah. But theoretically, NTFS is not supposed to let it get fragmented.
Theoretically, yes. Well, that's we all know.
Yeah.
All right. That music tells us the first hour of this show is done. But do not despair. There is a whole nother hour of the longest-running computer show in the known universe coming your way. A whole nother hour of Dave Enright, a whole nother hour of Steve Ray, a whole nother hour of me, Nick Francesco, and a whole nother hour of you. And the way you get involved in that hour is to give us a call at 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Take a bio break. Get yourself a beverage. But come on back, because we got a whole nother another hour of sound bites coming your way. And we will see you in just a couple of minutes.
It's America's longest running computer show. Back to more sound bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member supported Jazz 90.1.
WGMC Greece, Rochester. A public service of the Greece Central School District. Jazz 90.1.
Celebrating 50 years on the air in Rochester.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And in 4 minutes after the hour, we're hurtling headlong into the second hour of the longest-running computer show in the known universe, Soundbites, right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1. And you can give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Or toll-free at 800-790-0415. And I will read the news while you do that. Whatever else you can say about Windows 11 and whatever you think about its pushy tendencies and the Copilot feature that has been rolled out to pretty much everyone despite being labeled a preview, the operating system has ushered in a bit of a renaissance for decades-old built-in apps like Paint and Notepad. Notepad's development in particular has been striking. It has gotten small under-the-hood updates over the years, but in many ways this version is still the Windows, the version that is still in the Windows 11 at launch in 2021 was the same app that Microsoft shipped with Windows XP and Windows 95 and Windows 3.1 and Windows 1.0, as a matter of fact.
Would you get something good?
If it ain't broke.
Leave it alone. It's a very simple.
However, an updated version of Notepad currently rolling out to Windows Insiders in the Canary and Dev channels is adding two more modern features to the old app, spell check and autocorrect. Per usual, spell check and Notepad highlights misspellings with red squiggly underlines, and right-clicking the word or pressing Shift F10 will pop up a short menu of suggested fixes. Recognizing that Notepad is often used to view or edit log or config files, Microsoft said that spell check is off by default in log files and other file types indicated with coding, associated with coding. Spell check can be enabled or disabled for any given file type or for individual files in Notepad settings. Individual words can also be ignored in that document or added to your dictionary, so they'll always be ignored in every document you open. If you're upgrading from the Windows 10 version of Notepad, the spell check and autocorrect features join the tabbed interface, redesigned settings screen, an auto resume feature, and a handful of other tricks that the app has learned through Windows 11 development. Notepad is still well short of becoming a rich text editor, but there's room for it to pick up a few more basic text and document editing features, since Microsoft formally killed off WordPad in a recent Windows 11 update.
They're adding everything WordPad had.
Exactly.
Why didn't they kill Notepad and leave WordPad?
Right. Unlike Notepad, WordPad has been mostly left alone since a Windows 7 era refresh that added a user interface ribbon like the one in the then-current Office 2007 update. For free-of-charge rich text editing, Microsoft pushes users toward the online version of Microsoft Word instead. Microsoft is currently testing Windows 11 24H2 in the Canary and Dev Windows Insider channels, a preview of this fall's major update that will mark the operating system's third anniversary. Updates to Notepad and other apps could roll out before then, though, in keeping with Microsoft's release-them-when-they're-ready approach to feature additions in the Windows 11 era. Windows Insider has also got some new paint features earlier this month. Microsoft tweaked the way the brush size selector works and has added the option to designate one of your image layers as the background layer. Wonders never cease. So do you use Notepad as your daily word processor? Why? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free, 800-790-0415. I don't use Windows anymore, but when I did, Notepad was useful for coding back in the day when there were no development environments, integrated development environments, or IDEs. I used it all the time for that. But there are so many better things right now where that will say, oh, you're writing Python code. Okay, I'll highlight all the Python words and correct your mistakes and finish your parentheses and, you know, all that stuff. Or, oh, you're writing in Java. Well, I can give you hints as to what the parameters are for that particular function and et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah. So, I was once writing a program in COBOL, was it? And I missed a period and had 127 pages of errors. I wish we had tools like that back then.
Exactly. So, yeah, back in the day, something like Notepad was very useful. It is not useful for much of anything now. It is still a good product for looking at logs. It is still a good product for taking quick notes. That's pretty useful. I actually have a program called Retext. Is that what it's called? Here it is. Yeah, Retext. And it does markdown language. So it's kind of like, I guess you could call it a formatting language. So a couple of hash marks before a word makes it a heading. And, you know, one underline or two underlines or two stars in front of a word. Mm-hmm. In between, you know, four stars, two on each side, makes it bold, that sort of thing. So I use that for a lot of notes because it's gives me formatting that I can use. And I can do lists and I can do all that other stuff in it. But for plain... I don't do much in the way of plain text, but for plain text, it's very hard to beat Notepad because it used to at least just get the heck out of your way.
Yep. You know? Well, I like
one on the Mac called Text Wrangler.
Okay,
which was a subset of BB Edit. It doesn't suck. Right. is their tagline. and eventually, he just gave up on Text Wrangler. He said, just use BB Edit. The basic stuff is free. If you want the advanced stuff, you can pay for it. But, it opens a blank window with a blinking cursor.
Yep.
And you just write your text.
Yeah, I always liked it, you know, if I was searching for different web pages that I was trying to gather.
Yeah.
And what I would do is just open Notepad, have it off to the side of the screen, and I could sit there and highlight and then just paste it into this, and then I could send that out to an individual, like, here's some recommendations, and, you know, I'd go ahead and write the rest of my note, but it'd put all those links in there for me that I could just select it all, paste it back into this message going out. It was free, easy, and it did a great job.
Yep. And I also, if I just want to do plain text, there's just, you know, I use Gedit, which is a plain text editor. That's what it does. And I do the same thing when I'm doing the news. I gather all my news headlines and then into a little document.
Yeah.
I can move them around and decide I want these four, we're on our way. And I want something that just doesn't get
quick
in
and
my
dirty.
Way.
Quick and dirty. Mm-hmm.
Right. And that's what Notepad always was. But now, of course, they're turning it into a thing. And the idea
processor.
Was that if all you want is to have text, use Notepad. And if you want to fancy it up and you know, doll it up with mascara and lipstick, then you use WordPad. But now WordPad is gone, so now Notepad has to do that stuff.
Yep.
I'm sorry, you were going to say?
Well, no, it's turning it into a word processor instead of a text editor.
Right, exactly.
Not many people understand the difference between it, but when you do, it's a big difference.
It's a big difference, and sometimes all you want is something that will edit text.
Yep.
That let you enter text. Done. Don't need fancy. Don't need sexy, just need text. And apparently you don't get that anymore, at least with that product anymore. And one of the things that I always liked was programs that gave me a no distraction mode. You know, that was always nice, too. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Steve from Greece, New York. Hi, Steve. What's up?
Oh, good afternoon, gentlemen. I have a comment on Notepad and then a question.
Yep.
I find if I'm copying things into Word from the internet and things like that, it will come with formatting I don't want.
Yep.
Pasting it into Notepad does a fantastic job of stripping away all the extra formatting and things like that that make it impossible to read. Paste it in, bring it back, almost every, you're just left with plain text.
Yep.
A lot of programs have a paste special option where it's paste either paste and match style or paste and text only.
Right.
So like Control V is paste. So Control Shift V might be paste text only.
That's what I have on my Linux box. Control Shift V is just the text.
On the Mac, it's Option Shift Command V. Too many characters.
Sure.
Well, Well, see, I've learned something and haven't even got to my question yet.
All right, what's your question?
So I have been using the basic version of Yahoo Mail for years. I try to update. I do the update. The screen updates fine. It looks fine. As soon as I close the tab and open it back up again, I'm back to basic. I don't know how to make the upgrade permanent.
Don't you have to exit?
No, I don't. I mean, basically, I'm in a tab, obviously. I do the upgrade. The screen changes. It looks fine. As soon as I close the tab and then open it again, it's back to basic.
Yeah, but just closing it, I don't think saves the changes. When
what
you
changes the save? What changes the save? What saves the changes?
Because I would think if you went over to the corner where it says file and then exit.
Now, what you have to do is once you've switched to the newest Yahoo Mail, you then, before you close your browser, clear the cache.
Ah.
After you clear the cache, restart the browser.
Okay.
At that point, when you go back to Yahoo Mail, you should be prompted to choose which version you want to use. Pick the new version, and from then on, it should work.
Never thought of clearing the cache. Makes all kinds of sense.
Yeah.
That's why you guys get the big buck.
Yeah, we're paid in Canadian dollars. They're larger than American dollars.
Well, if you want to go that way, we can go to Russia. The rubles are big or something.
Yeah, but you need a wheelbarrow of them to get anywhere. Also, since we get paid zero, it doesn't matter what currency we don't get paid in. Yeah. So
I'm going to give you a 50% pay raise.
You're a generous human being, and we appreciate it.
Or
thank
just
you.
Go to that website that the person called earlier.
Oh, yeah, nominate us for the Radio Hall of Fame.
Nominate us for the Radio Hall of Fame, exactly right.
Yeah, it doesn't cost you anything.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Thank you, gentlemen. I appreciate it. As usual, you were most helpful.
Thank you very much, Steve. Have fun.
Yep.
Steve reminds me that on Sunday nights, at 9 p.m., we have the Soundbites Lounge, which I'm telling you right now we will not have on Easter.
Aww. About that time, I'll be ready to get rid of my relatives.
Well, you can certainly tell them that there's still one.
Yeah.
And just go hide in your room. But we're not going to bother.
Oh, okay. Hold on a moment.
I may not be available at that point. Let's see. We'll see how that works. But we're not planning on it. So this Sunday, tomorrow, we will have one. So if you're free at 9 o'clock, just head on over to soundbites.org/lounge. That's Bites with a Y. Francis would like us to remind you.
Very new.
All right.
I haven't logged into my Yahoo account since the last time someone had a Yahoo question. I've got 1,000 messages waiting.
I haven't even done that yet today. Maybe I'll do it during the break. But before we do any of that, we will talk to Colleen from Perry, New York. Hi, Colleen. What's up?
Hi. I was calling with regard to nominating you for the Radio Hall of Fame, and I've been checking around on the websites. The nomination website requires the name of the personality, the name of the radio program, and a brief bio. And I was checking on Jazz 90.1 website, and I found bios for Nick and Dave, but none for Steve. So if I can't nominate all of you, I'm not going to nominate any of you.
Well, I suppose that's fair. And that's Steve's fault.
Well, the last bio I uploaded, I had a brand new baby.
Yeah. who's now in his 20s.
26?
Yeah.
26 years ago.
Yeah.
So, you know, I checked Soundbite's website, too, and I don't see any kind of bio information for you there, either.
Yeah, I used to have tongue-in-cheek bios somewhere.
Yeah.
When I got rid of that stinking, no-good, lousy, rotten WordPress.
Yeah. Well, I just thought I'd let you know, that other listeners might want to know what's involved in nominating you for the Radio Hall of Fame. I think you should be there, too.
Thank you so much. And so now we know that the problem is Steve.
Sadly.
Clearly it is. All right. Thank you, Colleen.
Mm-hmm. Did you have a question?
Nope, that's it.
Oh, well, thank you. I'll get right on that.
Yeah.
Actually, I'm going to the Meet the DJ page right now, and I get an empty page. So it is me. It is me.
It's you. All right, I'm just putting a to-do note.
So click on our face and bring up our bio.
Yeah, that's what I'm doing.
Yep.
I didn't see a picture for you there either. I just went to the list of the DJs or the radio personalities on the website. That's all I know where to look for.
Yeah.
Yeah, we have the faces for radio.
Boy, do we. All right, I've added that on my to-do list. I love this to-do list. And I will do. But now you guys have to send me bios. Ha, ha, ha.
You got mine from
30 years ago. Send me a bio. Send me a bio.
You're going to be same one.
A bio.
30 years older. Look at
a bio.
The only thing that's changed is the gray hair.
And I got the face. I just need the bio. Yeah, and that means, Dennis, you're going to have to send me one. And Chris has never sent me a picture or a bio. And Rob, I'll just make up some junk and you can live with it. but yeah. Thank you, Colleen.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, I can do that.
Yeah, you can. And that's what we need. So, yeah, I will put bios back on Soundbite so you can click on the face.
And then really get scared. Did we lose membership there? It's going to be your fault.
It's going to be my fault then. That's right.
It's like, because I'm sure everybody else is like this too. You hear our voices, folks. And we've run into this back when we used to go out on tour and that and do remotes. And people come up to us and they go, oh, you're not what I expected. And it's like, is that good or is that bad?
Right, exactly.
Because I used to get it at the Jazz Fest. You know, people would come up to the tent and go, who are you? And I go, Dave Enright. Oh, you don't look like what you sound.
Yep.
I go, wait a minute, where's the core?
Is that good or is that bad?
thing was, she walked away and it's okay, is that, like you say, a good thing or a bad thing?
Right.
I don't know.
You can see our pictures on the main page.
If it causes nightmares, we are not responsible.
Five of us. And we don't have Chris because Chris has never sent me a black and white picture with him facing to the right, to his right. Notice, I just, Rob's picture is facing to the left, and it's from him like 30 years ago, but that's his deal. That's the way that works.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, there's, interesting. There's no bios on our page, and I will make that happen.
But this week I will attempt to get a bio together, and I will send it off to you, sir.
Perfect. And then people can click on our faces and get the link. That's easy enough. I can do that.
Do what to our
in
face?
All your free time, right?
In all my copious free time.
You're retired now, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's exactly right. I am retired, and so I have so much free time to do so many things.
Busier than ever.
Oh, man, when did I find time to work? That's what I don't understand.
But see, what you don't remember is once you retired from that job, you now have a full-time job with your wife. Honey, can you make this?
Yeah,
I need to get this ready for market, and I've got this I need done, and this, and this, and this. Before, she couldn't ask you because you had another job to go off to. Right. Now you're home.
Oh, she always asked me.
Yeah. That doesn't mean it's going to get done right away because work had to take preference.
But now you're
cold meat right there in front of her. It's like, yeah, it'd be great if I could have this. Could you 3D print this?
So the problem is my 3D printer. That's what you're saying.
Bingo.
I understand that. I do understand
you
that.
You created your own issue.
That's exactly right. You know how they say a boat is a hole in the water you throw money in?
Mm-hmm.
3D printer is a hole in your desk you throw time into. And that's absolutely true.
Yeah.
But she's happy, and that's really what counts.
That's all that matters if you want to sleep with both eyes closed.
That's exactly right. My wife likes scissors and knives. So Yes, I prefer to sleep with both eyes closed, and that's how I do it.
No, she is a wonderful lady, and you couldn't have asked for better.
No, I couldn't have. No, absolutely not. It was a perfect match for us. So, at least on my end, I hope on her end.
Maybe we should talk to her. You know,
maybe she can do better.
You can read the interest. You know,
there's no question.
She could family did her family disown her?
No.
Then you're probably safe.
I knew
that he's married to her.
I knew they were still dating. In the family. We went to their house and I formally asked my soon to be father-in-law for her hand in marriage. And he left the room and I thought,
"Uh-oh. Going to get the gun."
2 minutes later, he had put a record on the record player and it was I forget what is it. I do. I think it was I do. The musical, and the song was "My Daughter Is Marrying an Idiot."
And you knew the words,
and you still stuck around.
And I knew the song, and I knew immediately I was accepted into the family. I absolutely knew that because otherwise he wouldn't have done that. So yeah, I knew I was okay at that point. I think that's from "I Do, I Do."
The Father of the Bride, written by Harvey Schmidt. The "I Do, I Do" original.
Yeah, there you go.
January 1st, 1966.
There you go. And
starring Tom Jones. I'm thinking I'm gonna make that bigger. Or sung by Tom Jones. Yeah.
Yeah.
Isn't Google wonderful?
Google is amazing. Thank you. All right. Back to the phones. Our next caller is our friend Scott from Buffalo, New York. Hi, Scott. What's up?
Printer. My friend has an Apple iPhone, and she has a Google, small Google computers. And she wants a printer that works easily with both. We got an HP, and I have spent hours and hours and hours trying to get that to work. I had to get a special app, all kinds of things. So I want something that's easier to use. Whether it's an Apple printer, does Apple make printers anymore? Probably not.
Apple doesn't know, but you want a printer that has the AirPrint technology in it. That's Apple's name for the zero configuration, just go ahead and print. For any Apple products.
Excellent.
And
what was the computer?
She's got an iPhone, which she wants to print from.
Right.
And she has a
Chromebook.
One of those Google small a notebook. A Chromebook.
Yeah.
It's a Chromebook. And so. AirPrint, which should do this work? Is that like Bluetooth, or what does that do?
Well, it runs on top of Wi-Fi or Ethernet, and it lets the iPhone talk to the printer without needing any special app or special software.
It's a service built into the printer,
right? And some printers will have that built in, and other printers you need to download a special printing app, which means you can't print. Everything you want to print, you can only print the things the app handles.
Do I get that from the Apple Store?
No, it's built into the printer. You have to buy a printer with AirPrint built in.
AirPrint built in,
which most printers have these days, but some of them are sneaky and require you to install an app.
All right, that's maybe like that HP that I got her.
Yeah, yeah. Well, the other thing to watch out for HP is subscriptions. That they're doing subscription ink and subscription paper. I started seeing now on some of them.
Oh wow!
So yeah, they all want you to do that. Brother does too, but you don't have to.
Yeah. So printing from a Chromebook that used to be hard. You had to set up a Google something or other, but
you don't. Yeah, now it's pretty much anything that has a Wi-Fi. That will connect over Wi-Fi.
I bet they're whatever Google's version. Of AirPrint, whatever it is, under zero config, I think is the IEEE specification.
Right. There is a list of certified works with Chromebook printers from Brother and Canon and Epson and HP.
So I wish there was a date on that. So is this a 10-year-old list and they haven't updated it lately because they don't need to because everything works?
Right.
But we'll post that list. So they're known to work with Google. And then the other half is
I'll
see if I can find an AirPrint list. But again, so many printers are compatible, they may not have a list of them all.
Right. You can go through the list of the Chromebook printers and then check the specs for each one and pick one that also says AirPrint.
Or the box might say Chromebook and AirPrint or iPhone, smartphone, Android phones. It might have the logos on them.
Right. All right, we got to go, Scott.
Thank you. Bye.
Yep, thank you. Back in just a couple of minutes with Sound Bites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Talk you can understand. More Sound Bites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Henry.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And 34 minutes after the hour, we are Sound Bites on this beautiful spring day in Rochester, New York. It's not a big deal. The snow will go away in a couple of days.
Yeah, you don't like the weather? Wait a minute.
Exactly right. And I remember as a kid, as a GCB good Catholic boy, we'd troop over from the school to the church every May Day, May 1st, Feast of Mary. And the girls were always angry because they couldn't show off their pretty new dresses and pretty new shoes because they had to wear their winter coats and boots because we had a foot of snow on the ground on May 1st.
Yep.
So, you know, snow in March, not unusual and not a big deal in Rochester, New York. We're tough. We're tough here. On the other hand, Buffalo can keep the feet of snow that it gets. We're happy to let them do that.
So,
because we say tough, Buffalo.
Does anyone remember if March came in like a lamb or a lion? And
lamb.
It came in like a lamb, so it's going out like a lion. That's exactly right.
Yeah.
That's exactly right. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Brian from Rochester, New York. Hi, Brian, what's up?
Oh, good afternoon. I don't know if you guys offer any kinds of recommendations, but I'm looking for some kind of a tablet, something that I can just take when I travel so I can access the internet, maybe even take pictures if it's something with a cell phone. And so I don't know and I don't want to be tied down like with Google or Amazon where it's just like an e-reader. I don't want to do that. I want to be able to use it almost like a small computer, I guess.
Sure.
Pretty much any of the tablets will do that. So a step above an e-reader, which is a tablet that only has book reading program on it, an Android tablet or an iPad tablet is basically a whole computer, and you load whatever apps you want on it and do pretty much anything.
Yeah, and they range anywhere from a couple of $100 up to $1,000. So.
Or two.
Or two. Yeah.
The 13-inch iPad with a terabyte storage drive, it's $2,000. It's a high-end computer.
You're right.
For the low end when it comes to the price, of course. Yeah.
Well, you got to check out the specs. I mean, yeah, you can get dirt cheap, but then if you get one that's dirt cheap, you also got to look at the memory you're getting. How big is the hard drive?
How many pictures can you store on it?
Yeah, because that's all going to affect your usage.
And sometimes the machines that are too cheap, they have relatively slow processors in them. So it might be good for, you know, reading a book or reading a static web page.
Okay.
But when, you know, say a web page has animations on it or you want to, say, watch a movie, the processor is not up to that.
Do your homework.
Yeah. So you'd probably want to look at probably at least the $300 range to get something decent enough, and you can always try them out. And it's hard to try them out in the store because
it'd be worthwhile looking at. I've seen Samsung Galaxy, but I don't know if that, you know, other than that, other ones seem to be like, you know, Amazon or just Google.
Well, I'll tell you what, the Samsung makes good products.
Okay.
It again depends on what you want it for. Now, I bought an ONN tablet.
Which is Walmart brand.
Which is a Walmart brand. It was only $60, but all I use it for is an e-reader. It doesn't matter that it has a slowish processor. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter that it doesn't have a lot of storage because I threw in an SD card. And for that, it's perfectly suitable. It's 7 inches, sits in my pocket. I can read it anywhere. I've since replaced it with a Pokey 5, but that's not the point. The point is it worked great for that.
Probably more like a 10 to 12 inch and, you know, like something I can use for travel. And
exactly. So
that's support and want to watch a movie while I'm waiting for the plane or something.
So the best thing to do is to... You've already clearly put together what your specs are. So because you want to watch movies and like that, you want probably something with a with an actual headphone jack. Or you're going to have rechargeable headphones, Bluetooth headphones. And so that you can, you know, sit in a an airport without everybody hearing your movie.
Right.
USB-C headphones. A lot of tablets now use the charging port for wired headphones.
Right. Yep. So take a look at those specs. You want something that's quicker than the ONN tablet that I bought for $60 if you're going to watch movies. Jeez,
Walmart's actually got the 10-inch iPad on sale for $249. That's
a good price.
That's below our cost.
Yep. That's a very good price.
We can't even sell them that cheap.
So right. What's the 10-inch iPad, what is that all about? What can you, like, I would just want to be able to get on the internet, too, and read my email, like, when I'm in a hotel room. Maybe even save. The only thing that I do like is having Outlook, where I can perhaps maybe save some files. But if I can't save them, that, you know, I know you don't want to. I don't want to load Microsoft on there.
Yeah, Apple has its own mail reader, but you can use webmail. You can buy Outlook. We don't like buying Outlook.
Right.
Same thing, yeah.
Okay. Any else things? Anything else I should watch out for?
Some of the Amazon tablets have a discounted version because they force you to watch ads.
Yeah, that's what I'm trying to stay away from.
Yeah, some people don't mind that. I'll save $50 if there's an ad in the screen. So usually they're called sponsored or, what's the other Weasley word they use?
Yeah, something.
Yeah. So
subsidized.
Subsidized. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. No, I'd rather spend that extra $50 and not to have those ads or whatever.
Right. iPad at the price that Steve quoted is a very good deal.
I'd say, $3 to $3.50.
And that's on sale for $250.
You mentioned what was it? An iPhone,
iPad.
What tablet did you mention there? Was it Walmart? I think it was Walmart. You mentioned.
Yeah, Walmart has the iPad 10.2 inch on sale for $249.
Okay, so I'm going to make a note of that. iPad 10 inch.
Okay. $249. You're going to have to buy it soon because if that's a sale, and that clearly is a sale price.
Yeah.
Who knows how long it'll last?
That's 64 storage.
Right. Well, yeah. If it's that much storage, what can you save on those things, I guess?
Anything.
Use the tablets, that's why I'm asking.
Yeah, they work. They're essentially computers without a keyboard.
It's a touchscreen computer.
So pretty much anything you want to add to it, you can add to you can
including
save
your
on
keyboard.
It. Including your keyboard. And if you want to have, there's got to be some sort of spreadsheet.
Numbers. Apple's word processing spreadsheet presentation come with it.
Right.
You can use Google Docs. You can buy Microsoft Office.
Right.
Oh, okay. That's good to know. And I assume it has some kind of a port for, if I wanted to. Can I take pictures with something like that?
Yeah, it has two cameras. There's a front-facing selfie camera. Most tablets will have a front-facing selfie camera and then a rear-facing higher-quality camera to take pictures of.
Right. Okay, that's good to know. That way, and then I assume there would be some kind of a port where you can, plug in media for downloading to a computer.
Yep, comes with a charging port, and you can use that port to connect in flash drives and headphones and keyboards and anything.
Okay. All right. All right, I'll have to take a look at that. So I appreciate your, sharing your thoughts. That would be something for me to look at, and I'm going to check out the Walmart website, too. So thank you so much.
There you go. Good luck.
All right, thank you. Have a wonderful day.
You too. Bye-bye. Yeah. Like I said, I was very happy to pay $60 for a 7-inch tablet, and because all I was going to do is use it for an e-reader.
Simple needs.
And it's more than fast enough for that. Plenty of storage because I could throw in a micro SD card. And for that, it was perfect. But I certainly wouldn't use it to play games on or to watch movies on or any of that stuff because it's just not going to be powerful enough. You know, you get what you pay for and you pay for what you get.
And that's why I say folks have to take their time to do the research to see, you know, well, how big's the storage? I mean, a lot of folks get, just amazed at the price. Oh, I can get it this cheap? But then they don't see the other details. Like, oh, yeah, it's only got, low memory.
Right.
You know, it's a slower process.
Right.
It's a smaller screen. They got to read all the other detail that makes up that price.
Right. When you look at that, you can get how much is Numbers? Free.
Free.
It's installed.
Yep.
So if he wants to do Excel, it'll read Excel files.
Yep.
It'll write Excel files.
Yep.
So he's got it essentially is Excel. I mean, how much different is a spreadsheet going to be? So he can easily see it's any tablet he gets is going to be a little harder to manipulate without a keyboard. However, with the Apple 10-inch tablet, you can also get an external keyboard. Mm-hmm.
And so with any touchscreen tablet, your finger basically is your mouse pointer.
Right.
So that's sort of you're used to using your computer with a touchpad to move the cursor around. When you get with a tablet, your finger touching the screen is actually the cursor.
And you can get a pencil. Keyboard.
You can get a pencil if you want to use instead of your finger.
Stylus, you don't want to use a regular pencil.
Yeah. Apple calls theirs the pencil just to mess with you.
of course.
Yeah, and whenever you need to type something, a keyboard pops up on screen, which is great. If you do a lot of typing, then you may want a real keyboard. So that's what I've got on my iPad, is a real keyboard.
Right. And that essentially makes it a tablet.
Yep. Well, a laptop computer.
I meant a laptop computer. Yeah.
It also, the computer, the keyboard usually about doubles the weight, too. So.
Yes, there's that.
So my one-pound iPad turned into a two-pound laptop.
Yeah, but it's still small, concise, and it does a great job.
It's a lot lighter than my 14-inch computer.
And, you're traveling now. You're going to want to get, if you're traveling with it, you're going to want to get a little case that's padded. But they certainly make plenty of those.
Oh,
yeah.
And there are a few 10-inch iPads out there, so there are a couple of companies.
There's a 10.2, a 10.5, and a 10.9.
Right, but there are
companies. And then there's an 11-inch Pro, and we're mad at Apple for having four models that are almost exactly the same size. They have different innards, so each one, as you go up the chain, there's faster
a little
better, and
better. A little better.
But they're just so similar.
Right. But even the low-end one will do movies and all the stuff that, music and all of that stuff.
We kind of say, the $300 one is fine for everybody. If you're editing Hollywood videos, you want the $800 one.
Right. So, he should have no problem finding what he wants and doing what he needs to do. It makes sense. And they're very good, very good products. And they will connect to Macs and they will connect to PCs. If you need to do that, so that's not an issue, in order to load stuff into it, or you can plug a thumb drive in, right, on a Mac. Yeah.
Yep.
So if you put all your music on a couple of thumb drives, you can move them in and out of the iPad with that. So that's pretty easy.
The only thing that I would wonder about, excuse me, is, his other computer. If this is not his sole computer. Say he's got a PC at home, and he's using Google account to be able to go up to the cloud, and have because with Google Docs and everything else, that's all built in. And even though you got the tablet, you can sit there and put Google Drive on that.
Yep.
Now you've got 15 gigs of storage, or you can store all your stuff up there, and whether you're on the tablet or whether you're at home. Or on your phone, you can access all of that.
Right. Well, you can do that with iWork, too, right? Mm-hmm. You get iCloud.
Yeah.
and there's an iCloud.
Yeah, no, I'm just saying if he's already got a platform,
established
with
right. So yeah, all of that works, and getting a keyboard pretty much doubles the cost of the tablet.
$100 for a good keyboard case.
Oh, okay.
But the other like key thing that we've always told folks, where are you going to get your support? If you've never worked with a Mac before and you've always had PCs, stick with PCs and Androids because folks...
I got to disagree with you there because Android and iPad are very close to each other.
Very close.
And they almost have nothing to do with Mac or Windows.
But I'm saying the file systems and everything else.
File systems are completely different between them,
too. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. If you're used to the PC side and where you're storing files and all this other stuff, I agree with you there. They're just about all this, very little difference. But it's, file layout and the way I might do something on a PC versus the way you'll handle it on a Mac. You know, you got to go to this folder.
On the other hand, if where you're storing your documents is in Google Docs or in iCloud, it's going to be the same on both machines. So Mox-Nix, right? It doesn't matter.
I'm just trying to be devil's advocate.
Yep.
The better you name your folders now, the easier it will be to find things later.
Exactly right.
better than one folder that has 1,000 files in it.
So I shouldn't have a folder called Gollum Alfrey.
Yeah.
Exactly. All right. This is a good news item here. Apple is in ongoing discussions with Google and OpenAI to use their generative large language models, their AI, as the backbone of new iPhone AI features, but no formal announcement is expected until the summer. Thursday's report follows the news earlier this week that Apple has been in talks with Google to integrate Gemini AI engine into the iPhone as part of iOS 18. I don't generally read news items about rumors. But this seems to at least be much more than just a rumor.
Mm-hmm.
They really seem to be working on it. Apple CEO Tim Cook, or if you prefer Tim Apple, has promised that the company will break new ground in AI this year, and iOS 18 is expected to play a big role. However, Apple's internal work is said to be focused on smaller scale AI features that operate on device and do not require an internet connection. To drive more powerful cloud-based generative AI features, such as the ability to create images and write essays based on single prompts, Apple is seeking a partner that has the necessary large-scale hardware infrastructure and compute capabilities already in place. Siri is expected to take advantage of the artificial intelligence improvements that Apple plans to bring to iOS 18. One leaker has suggested that Apple is planning to use large language models to entirely revamp Siri and turn it into the ultimate virtual assistant. Another leaker said that one of the specific features Apple is developing is an improved interaction between Siri and the Messages app, which would let Siri autocomplete sentences more efficiently, effectively, and answer complex questions. But with the likes of NVIDIA and other AI companies continuing to shape the technology landscape, some investors are reportedly concerned that Apple will fail to keep up with the pace of change and may not see the hypergrowth expected of it unless it can boost its credibility by deploying generative AI features this year. The fact that both Google and Microsoft have been ramping up AI integration with Gemini and Copilot respectively and have built a massive back-end infrastructure to handle it. Apple is way behind, and it is much easier and cheaper to partner with someone than to build their own AI models and the infrastructure to run them. And right now, at least, it looks like Apple is wooing Google rather than Microsoft. So do you really care whose AI you use in your phone? Give us a call, your actual self, 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415.
One of the things that also adds a little credence to the story is Apple shut down their car project that never existed. So 10 years and $10 billion later, they decided, nah. But this rumor is that the several thousand people that were working on the car are being moved over to the AI departments, because that's the biggest thing in the car is developing the AI. And I wish we didn't have to use that word.
Right.
For driving mechanisms. You got a collision avoidance systems, object detection systems. It has to learn what that stuff is. And it can't all rely on the captures you click on to prove you're a human.
Right.
Pick out the bridges so I don't run into them with my electric car.
Exactly. But yeah, so, you know, right now the new hotness is AI. Everybody's got everything AI. And we know it is A, but it is not really I. And that's okay. I don't care about that. We're not, that's not what we're here to talk about right now. The fact is that everybody's putting AI into every product you can find. Pretty soon we'll have bottle caps with AI in them. And
wasn't the last Google developer keynote announcement, they'd said AI like 100 times in the, oh, yeah, in the 10-minute speech?
Everything is AI. Yeah. Apple's doing it. Microsoft is doing it.
Apple usually doesn't use the word AI. They use ML or machine learning.
Right.
So the fact
large language model, machine learning, et cetera.
The fact that they use the word AI is interesting.
Right. And so, yeah, there's... And yes, it can be useful. We're not up to Battlestar Galactica yet, where you can just talk and it puts in the commas and it does all.
Well, that, actually, that's
much better.
That we can do.
Yeah, it's much better.
It's getting the Cylons to plot against it.
Yeah, right. One of the things that I've loved for years on Google Docs is the ability to do dictation. So you can actually give it dictation, and it comes pretty close. It does a pretty good job. Mm-hmm. I've used it in meetings where you just turn on dictation, put your laptop in the middle of the room, and it essentially puts it all in for you. You still got to go back and correct a few things, and you've got to say, you know, Dave said this, Steve said that, Nick said this.
Most of the time you have to enunciate punctuation, so it knows what, you know, periods and new line and things like that.
Right. But so they're getting better. So really it's like taking dictation.
Yeah.
So... Dear sir, comma, new paragraph.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you for your letter, exclamation point.
And my wife, that was a medical transcriptionist for years, is kind of happy she retired when she did.
Yeah, exactly. but yeah, you can, you know, that stuff is all out there and it's all coming along. But Apple is way behind. And the reason it's way behind, Apple has incredibly powerful desktops, but doesn't have a powerful back end in the cloud. To the extent that Microsoft and Google do. Google, in particular, has been building up their back end, their generative AI models, their large language models on the back end for years now, and they have way more power up there than anybody else. So if Apple wants to be in the forefront now, the easiest way to get there quickly is to piggyback on what Google has already done. And in the long run, it's not about who originally created the product. It's about, do I have it in my products too? Because it's all buzzwords. You know, back in the 50s, you couldn't sell a car that didn't have tail fins. Did tail fins matter? No. But nobody bought a car that didn't have one. We're at the point now where people are not buying things that don't have AI in them.
And then the 60s, tail fins went out of style.
Tail fins went out of style, and we'll have whatever the new hotness is after AI. But the point is, right now, AI are chrome-plated tail fins, and we've got to have them.
Backup cameras were the new hotness for you, and then lane assist, the new hotness.
Now they've got Super Cruise.
Yeah.
Or whatever, each one is a different name for it.
Yeah, hands-free.
Where you just get on the highway and say, you know, take your hands off the wheel and not take a nap.
Or you still have a going to back and make a sandwich.
You still have, you know, the one I really like is Chevy has a camera.
Yep.
That if you take your eyes off the road for too long, it tells you this is a problem. But you can now get on roads and just take your hands off the wheel and it'll keep your lane. It'll keep you in between people and, you know, all that front-facing radar and back-facing and side-facing and all that other stuff.
Yeah, I like the cruise control that monitors distance, not just 60 miles an hour, but don't get too close to the car in front of me.
That's right. And Super Cruise does all of that. Yep. And, and it's just one more thing to go wrong.
Yeah. My wife gets nervous when I test that out. It was fun. Is it will stop when we came to a stoplight. The automated side didn't touch the brakes. It got a little closer than I would have.
Right.
But it did stop at the red light, and then it started up again when the light turned green.
Last time we went to Arizona. I rented a car that had lane assist, and I tried to switch lanes, and all of a sudden the steering was going.
Yep. You got to turn the blinker on so it knows you want to change lanes.
Well, yes. Yes. And I normally do, but there was nobody on the road. It was 2 a.m.
Yeah. Yep.
I didn't think I needed my directional at 2 a.m. with nobody else on the road. Turns out I did.
Gotta tell the AI you're music. Turning.
Right. All right, that's it. That music tells us we are done for another week. I want to thank everybody who called in. Great questions this week. I want to thank Dave Enright. Great work on the board this week. I want to thank Steve Ray. I'm Nick Francesco. And we want to thank all of you. We're coming up pretty soon on the pledge drive, so get those shekels together. We're gonna be begging pretty soon, but we want to thank all of you for all that you have done for us over the years, listening and everything else. And we'll be back in next week with a whole lot more sound bites right here on member supported Jazz 90.1. We will see you in just 166 hours. Be good to one another, will you?